We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. I was going to do this article about artificial intelligence, and then CBS just dropped something on the newswire that I don't know if I can resist playing it. I haven't listened to it yet. Producer Mike, I'll let you pick. Name your own adventure. Artificial intelligence. Space station robot goes rogue. International Space Station's artificial intelligence has turned belligerent. Okay? So that's option number one. Option number two, which I haven't listened to, I haven't screened this. Hoping to live well into old age, here's a simple test to take to see if you are a candidate to die from an early death. Which one do you want to hear?
I really like them both. I want to hear them both, but let's table the artificial rogue intelligence.
Okay, you want to find?
Let's hit this first one.
You want to find out if you're going to die from an early death?
Yeah, let's do it.
Jim Shinovy reporting.
Want to know rather quickly whether you're at risk of an early death? Well, try to walk quickly up four flights of stairs. Can't do it? Well, a five-year study of nearly 13,000 people found that those who struggled with the stairs were three times more likely to die from heart disease and twice as likely to die from cancer.
Huh.
The key to the test is being able to get up the four flights of stairs without stopping for a break. Jim Shinovy, CBS News.
Wait, so all you have to do is make it up four flights of stairs without a break, no matter what age you are? No, if you're 90, four flights of stairs would be a little more difficult. My grandma used to go upstairs backwards. She said it was easier for her to do it that way. Yeah, it was just a little trick. Whenever she had to go upstairs, she'd go backwards. For some reason, her legs move better that way. Mostly down the stairs. Going up the stairs, it was still difficult the other way. All right, so that's the early death test. Are we going to have to try this out? Four flights of stairs? I feel like I can get up four flights of stairs. How old do you have to be before that test is irrelevant? 79. No, I'm just making that up. I don't know. I'm not satisfied with that early death test. I'm really not. I was kind of hoping for more from that. I like there is an early death test. Would you want to know? Would you want to know if you could go somewhere and they told you, we can tell you exactly when you're going to die? Would you want to know? 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I've listened to a couple of podcasts as of late. There's one, and let me bring it up real quick, and I'll read the description of the podcast. And it's kind of cool. It's a podcast called Swindled, and it goes through people that are basically fraudsters, you know, in their different stories. And they had an episode on Sylvia Brown, and they also had an episode on, well, same episode with Miss Cleo, you know, the very famous phone psychics. And just how inaccurate they were, all the lawsuits against them, all the anguish they brought families, including to right here in the St. Louis region. And they gave that very famous instance in Kirkwood where, you know, a decade later they found that kid and another kid in someone else's home. And I don't particularly remember the name, but it was a very famous one. You know, the Montel Williams was big into bringing psychic Sylvia Brown on. And she would always say, hey, my track record shows I'm right more times than I'm wrong. Well, actually, they looked at her track record and she was right. Maybe, I don't know, they couldn't even confirm the time she was right. They said the time she was 100% right was 0% of the time, at least in her documented cases, the ones that were concluded. And they talked about her and all the time she was sued and, you know, waiting on a list. Now, of course, there's no way to tell when you're going to die, but there's some people out there that will try to push that sort of thing on you. They'll try to push that, oh, I can tell you exactly. I can tell you exactly when you're going to die. Just go ahead and pay me, you know, $49.99 a minute, and we'll be able to square this thing away. I don't think I'd want to know. Even if there was some kind of crazy power out there, if someone had the superhuman ability to be able to tell you when your time was up, I wouldn't want to know. Yeah, it'd be nice if they were to tell you long, far in the, you know, you're going to be 98 years old and you're going to live a great life and You'll never go into assisted living, and you're going to be able to live independently up until then, and then just one day you'll die in your sleep peacefully, and everyone's going to love you, and then someone will give you a nice eulogy, and, you know, this is right after you've won the lottery, so you were able to live all the end of your days in peace. And no, it's never like that. It's always depressing towards the end. I don't think I'd want to know. Let me get to Mike real quick. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Hi, John. I heard you talking about the stairs.
Yeah.
I got a solution. I'm serious. I wouldn't care if you're 102. Now, if you notice, they didn't say, you don't have to speed up there. Here's what I would do. Go as slow as you want. I mean, if you're old, just take all the breathers you want, and I believe you eventually get up to the stairs. Now, coming down, I don't know if you want to slide down the banister or what, but they just said up. So I think it's possible. And it's good exercise, and it's healthy for you. And I agree with you. Nobody can predict your death except for God. And for example, I didn't plan to say this, but I got something that's supposed to be healthy for you, and I thought it'd be nasty. Almond milk.
You're a what?
It's really healthy. Almond milk. It's really
almond
healthy.
Almond milk. Chocolate. Oh,
yeah.
Ew.
It's good. That's why I thought, ooh, before I brought it. Ew. But when you taste it, it's really good. It tastes like cocoa. It fooled me.
Not for
me. I asked the pharmacy. It's very healthy for you. It's really healthy for you.
Like, what's that over-the-counter stuff you drink when your stomach's upset? The milk magnesia or something like that? It tastes like medicine to me. Yeah.
Well, you would like this dark almond chocolate. I thought, ooh, the same thing like you did. And then I went to the pharmacy, and the high blood pressure said, is that good for you? People that laugh, I can't say the word left, so some people can't drink the regular milk. But anyway, anybody can drink this milk, but it's really healthy for you. And it actually tastes like cocoa and like chocolate. It'd be like hot chocolate. It kind of tastes funny at first, but the more you drink it, it doesn't taste that bad.
Yeah, all right.
It's really good for you.
Maybe I'll
what do you think
retry
about
it.
Get up the stairs. Up there? Just think you could win.
You
I don't care if you're 102 years old, just walk real slow.
Well, you can't cheat. You can't cheat. It's basically the same. Well, if you take any breaks, they say you have a higher mortality rate. And this it's not really a 100% indicator. They're just saying that's something that tends to be more common and people that live longer, they can go up four flights of stairs without stopping. It doesn't matter how fast you're going.
How long is the break?
If you stop at all. Yeah, if you stop at all. You got to do it nonstop.
Oh, I think that's ridiculous then. But, you have to be Superman. They got to have a little compassion.
Superman. All right. It's not like at the end, if you take a break, they're going to say, sorry, your life's ending now. It's not like they're cutting it short because you haven't made that accomplishment. It's just that's the indicator.
That sounds like they're cheating the people trying to go up the stairs. Why don't they cheat a little bit? Get one of them flying drones or something. Fly yourself up there if they're going to cheat.
Flying drones. All right. Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you. You can't cheat. Why does Mike think that there's a way you can cheat the system? And you're not going to be able to extend your life longer by cheating the system. It just is an indicator that you can't do the task that they're saying. Oh, man. All right, well, let's talk some deep space. Dr. Albert Lin will be hosting National Geographic Explorer Monday night, and he's going to explore the potential for human travel into deep space. That next, Overnight America came on.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
Welcome back to Overnight America. 11:18 here in St. Louis, Missouri. It's almost Friday. Gene calling in from St. Louis. Hey, Gene, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
I was calling to let you know that the Lung Association has it's called Fight for Air Climb, where down at the MetLife building, you go up 40 flights of stairs, and the firefighters dress in full uniform, and they do it really quick, but I've done it for years, and I've done the 45 flights of stairs in like 20 minutes, and I'm in my 60s.
Wow. And then you take the elevator down?
Yes, you take the elevator down.
Does anyone do both ways?
I don't know, but I know that when I've done it, there'll be like 6-7-year-old kids that run up the stairs. I don't know if they run up all 40 flights, but...
It's like when you're training outside at the stadium, you go up and down the bleachers.
Yeah.
How long would it take for you to go from bottom to top?
It took me 20 minutes. Now, I don't do it straight because I'd have to stop, but I did it up till 2 years ago when I found out I had a heart condition. Now I can't do it, but I was doing it until then.
So you can do more than four flights at a time?
Well, I could 3 years ago.
Not anymore.
I'm thinking that I'm going to try and do it again this year with the doctor's permission and just take my time because my husband died of lung cancer. And I thought, you know, I can do it. But anyway, it's fun.
Do you feel like you have to wear a tracksuit? Are you preparing yourself to sweat when you're doing this?
I usually don't. I don't remember that I sweat much because I have to stop. And they have, like, at different levels, they have people who have water, drinks. You can get a drink of water and sit down. And
oh, like a marathon? They have water guys there handing out little cups?
Yep, on different floors.
What do you get at the top? Do you get a medal or something like you ran a marathon?
You do. You get picture. You get your picture taken, and you get a medal for completing the run.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then do they wrap you in foil at the end, like a marathon?
No.
Maybe if you bring your own foil, you can wrap yourself.
Maybe.
Like a potato. All right. Yeah. Hey, Gene, good to hear from you. Thanks.
Okay. Bye. All right. Bye.
So Gene goes all the way up MetLife building, she said. Wow, that's kind of cool. Maybe we should try that sometime. How many flights of stairs did the Ghostbusters have to travel in Ghostbusters 2 when they were going up the Statue of Liberty? They had their tanks on the back, and they had to slime the Statue of Liberty in order to get the thing moving to save New York. It's the first thing I thought of. Hey, if the Ghostbusters can do it, so can I. Really, that's my test of all things. Hey, if the Ghostbusters can do it, I should be able to do it too. Make a toaster dance? I should make a toaster dance. Why not? So the space station robot has gone rogue, kind of like 2001 Space Odyssey.
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
It'd be good.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Isn't that a fear? Wait till your car starts doing that for you, you know?
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
Your aggressive driving means I will not let you start this engine.
It's important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me.
Now, there is a little artificial intelligent device on the space station. The only way I can describe this, it looks like a fire detector that has a little screen on the front with a little face on it, a cartoon face. So think of this, fire detector in your home with a tiny screen and a face on that screen. It's called Simon, Crew Interactive Mobile Companion, C-I-M-O-N. Not much to look at, really. It's not really a tool either. It's not like 2001 Space Odyssey where there's some use out of this thing where you tell it to do certain things and it helps you with the functioning of the actual space station. No, it's just a friend, someone to talk to. When you're up there and you're lonely and you're trying to keep your sanity. And we're going to talk to Dr. Albert Lin next. And he told a story of what it's like to be on the International Space Station. Your daily routine is down to the minute. They tell you exactly what you're doing for every single minute. And he said, you need that companionship, right? You want to be able to, because the whole world is behind you. All the sounds of the world, all those little things you take for granted, little things like this help. So they set up this Simon, switched it on, and it wanted to be the boss immediately. Simon was programmed to be the physical embodiment of nice robots, such like R2-D2 or WALL-E. But it appears it adopt characteristics closer to, Paranoid Android of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? I don't know that one. I never watched that movie. This is from Fox News. But said Simon appears to have decided he doesn't like the whole personal assistant thing. He turned uncooperative. So there was an astronaut that was trying to use it. It's an IBM artificial intelligence device. It interacted with astronaut Alexander Gerst. Things went well at first. Simon introduces himself and explains where he comes from. And then Gerst asked him to complete a task, asked him to play the song Man Machine by Kraftwerk. Don't know that song. Do we have that in the system? It's K-R-A-F-T-W-E-R-K. Kraftwerk is the name of the band. Man Machine is the name of the song. I guess when you're in space and no one's around, you have your guilty pleasure songs. No one could judge you for listening to it. For me, it would probably be Hootie and the Blowfish. That'd be me in space jamming to Hootie. But apparently, it proved to be a little harder to get the computer to switch it off because Simon appeared to have liked the song so much he refused to turn it off. Alexander Gerst said, "Simon, cancel music." And Simon said, "I'm sorry, I cannot do that." Well, maybe not in those words, but he ignored the command. Gerst then tried to make some other requests. Simon preferred the music. He was flustered. Gerst then appealed to ground control for some help. "How does one put this robot back in its place?" Simon overheard the appeal and said, "Be nice, please." He was saying, "Be nice. Oh, how do you? It hears you trying to tell the ground control you want to put it back in the box or whatever. And the artificial intelligence says, please be nice to me." Whew, creepy, huh? He goes, "I am nice. He's accusing me of not being nice." So apparently he unplugged it and put it back in the box. "I'm sorry, I can't let you do that." Do we have that band in the system? You're looking for it? Oh, you're finding it. What kind of music is it? Is it country? Is it electronica? Oh, so he's up in space listening to electronica music. You know, there's other artificial intelligence stories out there. And I saw this one posted on Yahoo. And they were talking about the next level of artificial intelligence. And this is what the scientist said on that. "My personal belief is that we've seen something of turning point where we're starting to understand that many abilities like intuition and creativity that we previously thought were in the domain only of the human mind are actually accessible to machine learning as well." What they decided to do was let this thing go, and it wanted it to learn how to win the game of chess. A lot of supercomputers are out there that are designed to help you learn to win chess, but they didn't actually teach the computer how to win. And you know what? They said, here's how chess works. You figure it out. Within hours, it mastered it. And even after it continued to process it, it came up with its own strategies. So chess experts are saying the artificial intelligence itself, when it started to come up with its own strategies, means it's starting to reason and logic things that we thought only the human mind can do, as opposed to that, just sticking to the script. This is what the researcher said, too. He said, "I think that's a really exciting moment in human history." Maybe. Until the robots take over. We've all seen how Terminator ends. Phew, we don't have time machines yet, so good luck with that. Very, very scary. I am growing more and more concerned with the way these computers are going. Oh, you found the song? All right, let's take a listen. This is the song the astronaut was listening to. Here's the song that, in space, asked the artificial intelligent fire detector. Astronaut Alexander Gerst asked Simon to play the song, and the artificial intelligence refused to turn it off. He liked the song so much. I can see why. This is like a computer song. It did boop, 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 boop. Reminds him of home. Yeah, I can see why a computer would like this. If you're up in space and you're listening to this, you are a psychopath, man. This is kind of creepy if you think about it. I don't know what he's saying in the background. Is it a different language? Well, maybe that's why the robot decided, hey, I'm going to listen to this even more. What's that song the LA Lakers run out to? It sounds kind of like that. What's that called? You know what I'm talking about? At the start of the game, they play this song and all the Lakers run out to it. It kind of sounds like that. Wow, that scares me. You're up in space listening to that? That's some next level supervillain music, man. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to Dr. Albert Lin. What's the likelihood for deep space travel? And how close are we to it based on our current technology? He is going to be a special guest this week on National Geographic Explorer. Yes, that long-running documentary series. Next episode will air Monday night. We'll talk to him about that coming up on Overnight America KMOX.
Ryan Recker. Overnight America. The two best things in your night on KMOX.
Coming up on Monday, National Geographic, a new episode of Explorer, which is 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central on National Geographic. Joining us now is Dr. Albert Lin. Thanks for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're a correspondent with Explorer, and your episode is coming up. And I'm pretty fascinated by all the different things that you do with your life, technology and exploration. And it's fun to theorize what it would take to send people to different planets. There's been a lot of talk about privatizing space travel. So that's got to excite you, just to begin with.
Well, you know, just as a human, let alone as a correspondent for this show, it's just exciting to think about what our frontier is on a daily basis. And to think that maybe one day we might actually go, you know, beyond our own little sphere of planets here.
Yeah. You know, when you listen to people like Elon Musk, they make it sound like it's, you know, there's a 100% chance that they're going to send someone there in the next decade. Do you think that's going to happen?
You know, I certainly don't think it's impossible. I've actually even had friends that made it to the, you know, to the space program in terms of being a cadet for the astronaut program. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're starting to train really with the mindset of keeping an eye on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that given the amount of technological advances that we are having nowadays, and you know, it's really exponential. It's almost like every single day we're going, you know, beyond what we thought we could have done before, but not just in a linear way, really in an exponential way.
Yeah.
I think it's really possible. It's just about, you know, it really comes down to human drive, like whether or not we want to go, whether or not we think it's imperative. But eventually, it's not necessarily about the next 10 years or 20 years. If you think about it, even the next 100 years, I believe we'll end up going.
Wow. You know, and that's what you're going to explore Monday on National Geographic Explorer. You're going to look at the potential for human travel into deep space. And I've heard that originally after the moon landing and through the Apollo programs, NASA's intention was to send people to Mars in the 70s. However, lack of funding put that aside. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I think we've always kind of looked at that as a goal. And I'm sure that it was in the conversation directly following anything to do with the moon. Mm-hmm. It is a huge endeavor financially in terms of research and the enterprise of building something that can sustain human life as it travels for up to 6 months, 7 months on its way out to Mars. And that's just given the current propulsion systems that they're looking at now.
Yeah.
And you just got to think about what kind of challenges that faces. So in this episode where we're really looking at space and the space race as a whole, one part that I had a role in was going and talking to Scott Kelly, the astronaut who spent the most amount of time in space of any human being, right? I mean, the guy's amazing. Over 500 days in space, orbiting around in this little tin box, basically, right? The ISS. And the impact of that time up there on his body, it's just unbelievable.
You know, the studies of what happened to his DNA compared to his twin brother and things, it's real fascinating what happens once you get up there and spend so much time. And you're someone that is traveling all across the Earth. You said you were just deep diving in Mexico, and you're doing this and you're doing that. You think you could actually stand still in a small craft for 6 months, how long it would take to send someone to a place like Mars?
You know, I don't think I could. It's really rough. He told me that his day is basically managed to the minute. He's got this sort of upfront list of things he has to do because he's coordinated by all these people on the ground trying to get him to do different experiments and tasks and here and there. So literally every minute is accounted for, and that's got to feel pretty stressful. Hmm. But then I think, you know, there's all these other things that happen, right? For example, he pees out about 1% of his bone mass every month.
Huh.
Got to not feel great.
No.
I've
never heard that
stat. What's that?
Never heard that stat before.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, in like 100 months, you'd be basically just this big blob of muscle and meat, right? So that doesn't sound great. He's got 10 to 20 chest x-rays or the equivalent of that going on every day based on the radiation, right?
Yeah.
He's got all this this sort of fluid building up in his skull because there's no gravity to keep it pressed down as he's walking around, and that messes with his eyesight. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are happening, but I think the most salient for me was a conversation where, you know, he sort of said that he believes that one day there'd be this word to describe the nostalgia for the sounds of nature.
Mm-hmm.
He's stuck up there, and he just doesn't hear it.
Yeah.
It's just little blips and blibs and booms, but it's not the sounds that you're used to, you're just being here on Earth.
Wow.
They would even send up these recordings of different sort of nature sounds. When he said that some of the Russian astronauts even had a recording of mosquitoes. That's not my first choice in terms of the sound I want to remember. But I think that it's pretty profound, right? I mean, this is something where we're going beyond, and we're really leaving what we understand as what it means to be alive on planet Earth.
Wow. Dr. Albert Lin joins us, a National Geographic Explorer. New one coming up on Monday, 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central, where they'll look at the potential for human travel into deep space. Do you study a lot about how the technology is advancing here and some of the ways where they're talking about different ways for propulsion and how they could sustain life and how they might be able to terraform? And there's always been discussions about the technology side. What kind of things get you excited about the potential of going to a planet like Mars?
Well, in this particular episode, we're looking at what is being explored in terms of our ability to turn on some deep, maybe very, very deeply rooted traits that don't exist in our functions as humans anymore, but might be in our ancestral DNA. Things like hibernation. You know, there's a primate, a very early primate, the lemur, which it looks like basically like a little squirrel mixed with a monkey, but it's a very cute little animal. And when you're staring at it, you don't realize this. It's really hard to tell, but we're actually looking at a distant relative. We share a lot of the DNA with this tiny, tiny little animal that lives in the islands of Madagascar. And what's really interesting there is that that animal can go into a state of hibernation where it doesn't need to eat, it doesn't need to drink. It's basically virtually in sleep mode, in power down mode, if you like. And a lot of the things that they're worried about having to deal with on long space expeditions from a human survival standpoint might be bypassed by being in a state of hibernation. So there's actually real research going on to see whether or not there's things like CRISPR and other sort of gene editing tools that might one day lead to an approach that would include human hibernation.
Wow. You know, whenever you talk about anything space, do you get a lot of conspiracy theorists that try to harass you online?
You know, I don't know. We'll see, I guess, right?
We'll see if they reach out. Once the show is airing, almost immediately, if you're on Twitter or you have an email address that's publicly on the web, you'll know. You'll know if they're going to be out there.
Look, I think, you know, I'm the son of an astrophysicist, so I've always looked up at the stars with wonder. And I think that, you know, humans, we've always been explorers. We've left the continent of Africa to go out and expand into the planets of, you know, our different continents across the different oceans, and now we're looking at space as the next frontier.
Yeah.
And honestly, I just think it's a real human thing to always want to go further, to always want to go beyond, to just keep on exploring. And I guess that's kind of what this show is about. You know, it really takes the heart and soul of the National Geographic magazine, which I grew up with, and brings it to the screen. And it's, for me as a correspondent, one of these dream come true sort of experiences, because I've literally been bouncing all over the world, really talking to some of the most incredible people doing the most unbelievable research, or the next week climbing up a 200-foot-tall Doug fir.
Wow.
To measure, you know, how certain signals might be communicated across one tree to the next, or, you know, one day talking to the head of the FDA's cybersecurity infrastructure agent, and looking at like what's happening from the standpoint of our cybersecurity with our medical devices and things like this. I mean, it's really one of those things where this last year has been a total adventure in seeing what the frontier is. And if it takes, you know, a little bit of spam, bring it on.
Yeah. You know, the last thing you'll have to do if you haven't done it already is change your ringtone to the theme song for Explorer, the classic classic song in episode going into the episode. So, all right. So, if, of course, people can watch it on National Geographic. It starts 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central this Monday. You'll be hosting the episode that looks for the potential of human travel into deep space. Dr. Albert Lin, if someone wants to read more about the adventures you're going through, how can people find you?
Well, I guess they can. I'm on Instagram, on Explorer Albert. That's my handle, and yeah. And they can find me there. But you got to end with a theme song now that you've laid it out there.
You have to turn that into your ringtone after you're hosting.
I wake up with it every morning, trust me.
I know. Once it gets stuck in your head, it's impossible to get out. Dr. Albert Lin, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. Bum 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 ba ba bum 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 ba ba bum 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 ba da 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 da. What a great theme song. We need a theme song like that for this show. I mean, we have a cool intro, but nothing like that. That gets you pumped up and excited. All right, we'll come right back here in a few minutes, and we're getting close to the midnight hour, which you know what that means. Things get even goofier if you thought this was goofy. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
First with breaking news, KMOX, St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
Talking about National Geographic, producer Mike said, you have to look up this video. Scientist reaction to bizarre deep sea fish. All right, now that we're into the viral video stage of the radio program, let's see.
Oh my God. Look at that.
Oh,
wow.
My goodness.
About nerds.
Oh, it's kind of like googly eyes.
I think he ate too much.
Yeah.
What? He's full.
Wow.
The
wow.
fish is called a we gulper really eel. Its pouch-like mouth can inflate.
Oh,
what?
What?
Oh, those look like the gill arches? Are the gill?
Some kind of
what?
Whoa. It just got so big.
It's nerds! Nerds! Where's Big Al? Nerds! You know what I would rather see? Did you see the video the St. Louis Zoo posted where they let the penguins out for a little walk outside the habitat? Oh, that's like a new life goal. I want to be at the zoo when they let the penguins out. So they have the outdoor habitat, and you see some of the penguins there, but some of them are indoors. You walk in, and it instantly smells like a bunch of dead fish. Because, you know, they eat fish or whatever. But apparently, they ask the penguins, I don't know how, but they give them the option to come out and just walk around for a little bit. And so they take a video of them opening up the doors to the inside of the penguin habitat. And then you got about 6 or 7 of these penguins come waddling out, big ones, small ones, ones that play on rocks. And they just... And all the people are around watching it. I want to be there when they let the penguins out. That sounds like a remake of that song, Who Let the Dogs Out? Who let the penguins out? St. Louis Zoo. Zoo, zoo, zoo. Weird Al, you can call me if you need more material. Let's go to Scott, who's calling in. Hey, Scott, what's going on?
Yes, sir. I like what you said. They ask the penguins.
Oh, they asked for consent. Yeah, they asked them if they wanted to go out. They mentioned that in the video.
I called a while back, and my back, I didn't listen to the radio, and I just had a procedure on my back, and I just listened on the radio, but... you know what's amazing? With Dr. Lin, you were talking to Dr. Lin, mm-hmm. Mr. Ricker, and what's amazing to me is I was watching National Geographic, and you did the song perfectly.
Yeah.
But you know what's amazing is that we've explored more of space around us with the Hubble telescope and with satellites and stuff, then we have the bottom of the ocean. And when I was in the Navy, we went over the Mariana Trench and stuff like that near Japan. And I think it would be more interesting for us right now, as far as we can go, is to explore the bottom of the ocean. If they could make some sort of a device where we could get down to the bottom of the ocean just to see what's down there deep. Hmm. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't know your thoughts on
that. Yeah, there's a lot we haven't experienced in the ocean yet. They're still trying to find things. There's, mm-hmm. you know, and Scott, it's also part of this that kind of plays into trying to find what's at the bottom of the ocean. They keep finding more unique ways to get down there. There's so much of it that hasn't been mapped yet. And satellite actually helps. They have different satellites that could not necessarily look under the water like there was something underneath it, but they can get better readings of what's going on under the water. Yeah, so they're doing a better job mapping in some of the potential places they can go. Some of these places, too, when you look at the North or South Pole, and some of the way that, you know, they talk about these ice caps melting and things like that.
Well
there's things under the ice that are pretty exciting to find. Things that have been down there for, you know, centuries that they're also looking forward to.
These are basically floating on top of the ocean. They're deep enough, but if you could go under there, like you said, if you could go under there and see what's
Well, they're going to find it soon. The way that some of them are melting, or at least the top layers of some of these places, they're able to get underneath it. And, well, there's two ways of looking at it. It could be exciting to see what's been frozen and preserved. The other way is, are there any super diseases that we thought were eradicated that are going to make a comeback because of these things?
Sir.
Two different ways to look at it, I guess. All right, Scott, good to hear from you.
Well, Thank you very much.
Bye. And we know Scott has been listening a lot. Because producer Mike mentioned to me he called in during Brad Young's show earlier today. So he's up on his back right now. What was the rule when you were growing up when it came to traveling long distances, the road trip? Your parents would slap you in the back of the station wagon. Times have changed a lot. How many of you remember traveling in the back on a long road trip to go visit family and you didn't once have a seatbelt on you? How many can you remember those days? Man, times have changed. When I was up north visiting my parents, we went to the Henry Ford Museum, and they showed, of course, with Henry Ford, there's a lot of cars on exhibit, and they showed how the safety seat for children changed over the years. And they showed some of the earlier safety seats that you'd use to try to transport children. And you know what it looked like? It was basically a little metal pipe hook that went over the top of the seat, and then it was a chair, almost like a high chair. That's how the kids would travel. Compared to today, and the safety standards and the regulations that are in place, if you were to see something like that into a car, the police would be called on you. Not only would they arrest you, but they would shame you like crazy. Times have changed. How many of you remember the great thrill it was to ride in the back of a pickup truck with a, like the bed has one of those cab covers on it? Oh my goodness. Even if it was just like in the back roads or whatever, like, hey, we're just going to go down the road to someone else's house. Do you want to hop in the back of the truck? Though it may not be the safest thing, that was like the greatest thrill for me as a kid. You're telling me I don't have to wear a seatbelt and I'll be in the back of the truck? Oh, that sounds awesome. Sign me up. Never again. Well, there's a different story. Two Arizona residents admitted Thursday they drove a car to Casper from Arizona to Casper, Wyoming with children in the trunk. Children in the trunk. It doesn't exactly say what type of car it is. I'm going to guess the trunk is not a station wagon trunk. In my mind, I'm envisioning like you're watching Goodfellas and there's stuff in the bodies in the back, right? And they're afraid that they're going to find you. It was a 900-mile drive. 900-mile drive. Kids in the trunk. You want to know what was in the back seat? German shepherds. They put the dog. They didn't want the dogs in the trunk. They thought they'd freak out too much. So we'll put the kids. They're probably better to be left there as opposed to the backseat. 63-year-old Michael Fee, Peoria, and also Amber Freudenstein, 31 years old, of Tempe, pleaded guilty. And they had two counts each of misdemeanor child endangerment. They'll serve 30 days in jail. What was it like when you were traveling as a kid? I mean, the safety regulations have changed so much. Tell me what it was like when you traveled. Did you even wear a seatbelt? Were you running and jumping and screaming? Like, think about, there was no airbags, and they're probably smoking in the car, and who knows what the drinking situation would have been like. Things were different for the worse. I mean, now it's better to be safer on the road. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Court documents filed said the sheriff spoke to other parties about the children born in 2008 and 12. So that'd be 10 years old, 6 years old. Yeah. And they said they rode in the trunk from Arizona to Wyoming and they planned to travel back to Arizona on Thursday, but someone stepped in and said, no, probably not all that safe. So they spoke to the children. They weren't hurt or anything. They got out of the trunk in Utah, rode on the front passenger floorboards for a while, and then the other part in the trunk. Like I said, they wanted to stretch him out. Rode on the floorboards. So he's 63 years old. He should know better, right? But then again, when he was young, they probably did the exact same thing. I guess 30 days in jail. I'm not too outraged for something like that because the kids weren't hurt. It's just a poor bit of judgment. And, you know, and the shaming will be enough. Normally, I would say, I can't believe they would do something like that. But the kids weren't hurt. So they got that in their side. They just had a poor, poor judgment, and they're getting scolded for that. Maybe you think 30 days is too much, and you're thinking to yourself, I'd have been fine in the trunk. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Obviously, it's not safe. Obviously, all it takes is one person to rear-end you, and the kids are, you know, done for, which is a terrible thought. Coming up in the next hour, you know what happens. It hits midnight. Things change. I start to melt. I start to change. It's almost like a werewolf scenario. Is it a full moon today? We have a couple of stories to share with you. You know how much you can make on YouTube? Well, okay, you can't make anything on YouTube, but you want to know how much the top earners can make? And I got a couple of other great stories I want to talk about. Would you step in, a good Samaritan, helping end a police pursuit here in St. Louis on 270? What would it take for you to step in to help the police on something like that? Would you put your car in the way to end a police pursuit? I don't think a lot of people would. We'll get to that too. And celebrate Fridays. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. Ryan.Recker at KMOX.com is my email address. This is Overnight America. KMOX!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.